For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Precap. We have a loaded show for you this week. Tom Bogert of The Athletic joined Seth Maycomber to talk about the Revs and the end of the transfer window and other dealings since the Revolution seemed to be front and center with MLS rumors across the league. So good to get Tom's perspective here. We also have another precap episode from Tom this week. So before we get into that, we wanted to say thank you to our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, NHL playoffs, and of course, Major League Soccer. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams, including your New England Revolution. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts.
Hey, this is Tom Pinzone back with another Revolution Precap, just to get you ready for this week's game, as we've been doing for the last couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to do it. But it's just kind of a week-by-week thing, but, you know, so far so good between Andy and I. We've been able to make some time to try and get this preview for you, and hopefully you've been enjoying it. The nice thing about this midweek period is that you've kind of maybe moved on from the last disappointing performance, and you can try and convince yourself that there's some reason that you should have optimism to watch the game on Saturday, to compel you to hopefully actually watch the game. So with that in mind, we're going to try and put as positive a spin on this weekend's opponent as we possibly can. And then, of course, just make sure that you're prepared for the inevitable disappointment when none of the things that I think might happen, happen. So next up, for your last place New England Revolution, is the first game of two in a row and four out of five on the road against the Chicago Fire. The Revs play Chicago Saturday night with an 8:30 p.m. kickoff, so you'll have to be willing to stay up a little later to see if the Revs can pick up their first point away from Gillette Stadium this season. The Revs have lost all four road games this year, scoring two goals and conceding 10. Luckily, Chicago isn't too good at home this year either. They have two wins and a draw from their five home matches with a goal difference of -3, so they have not exactly been lighting it up at home either. So again, you can start to see the theme here. We're trying to build a strong case for optimism this weekend. Overall, Chicago sits in 12th place. That does put them 6 points ahead of New England, with a record of 2 wins, 4 draws, and 4 losses, which has them on 10 points for the year. They are 2 points out of a playoff spot. The Revs, just to keep track, are 8 points off that mark already. Chicago has been struggling as of late, with just a 1-2-2 record in their last five. Their last win came against the Houston Dynamo back on April 6th. Chicago has not even scored in their last three games. They've had a pair of 0-0 draws and a 4-0 resounding loss to Real Salt Lake. So, you know, again, this is similar to the Toronto game. This is about as good a time as any for the Revs to be facing Chicago. Chicago has only scored more than one goal 2 times all season. Of course, the Revs have yet to do so at all in MLS this season so far, but Chicago is not that far ahead. They tend to either score no goals or only one. So again, the all reasons to think that the Revs can get something out of this game. Chicago ranks 21st in goals scored per game and 23rd in goals allowed per game. So they're not scoring very much, and they're giving up quite a bit. So, of course, you know, we've heard that about the local team quite a bit as well. There's really hardly any category in which Chicago ranks highly in, whether it's XG, XG against, possession, shots per game. There's really no reason to think that this is a team that the Revs can't get 3 points against, except, of course, for recent performances and points by the New England Revolution themselves. But if you ignore that, this is one where we can get maybe as many as three entire points. The Revs will need to be careful, though, if they continue with their ponderous ball movement in their own half. Chicago presses more effectively than the Revs with a superior passes per defensive action average. So essentially how frequently they disrupt the other team's buildup. They've also forced an average of 11.9 high turnovers per game, whereas the Revs have only been able to create 7.9 high turnovers per game against their opponents. A high turnover is essentially within 40 yards of the opponent's goal. The good news is Chicago has only 13 shots from all the high turnovers they've created, and they have yet to score from a high turnover that they've forced against their opposition so far this year. So hopefully their inability to take advantage of successful high pressing continues against New England on Saturday. The Revs should expect Chris Brady to be in goal for Chicago on Saturday night. He's allowed 17 goals from an expected goals on target of 17.94 in 2024. So he's doing just a goal better than he would be expected in terms of the saves he's made. And FootMob's last four match ratings for Brady have been 7, 7.3, 5.8, and 7.8. So, you know, three out of the last four performances that he's been in net, they look to have been, you know, strong performances. Looks like he's in pretty good form. And again, you know, the Fire have not conceded a goal in three consecutive games. So whether it's the goalkeeping or the back line, they seem to have things sorted out quite well at the back. Jerdan Shaqiri, he's one of the Fire's designated players. He is likely going to miss this game. He's not expected to be back until the middle of May. But once again, very similar to Toronto, who is missing Lorenzo Insigne, he has only delivered two goals and one assist in eight games so far this season. So he's not exactly been tearing it up for Chicago when he has been healthy. Chicago's leading goal scorer is 20-year-old Brian Gutierrez, and he only has three goals and one assist in 529 minutes this season, playing from a wide position. Despite being their leading scorer, he actually hasn't started in their last four games and has played just 75 minutes total in his last three appearances. So, again, it's a pretty good sign that their leading goal scorer only has three goals, and he doesn't even start. So, yeah, again, there's lots of things to psych yourself up for to inevitably be disappointed about this weekend. Fabian Herbers, which I'm sure has just been pronouncing correctly, is the Fire's top-rated player this season, according to FootMob, with an overall rating of 7.41. He joins Gutierrez as the only two Fire players with an overall rating above 7. And I think once you get above 7, you know, you're talking about someone that is consistently performing at a high level week in and week out. Unless, of course, it's a match rating of 7 or higher for Matt Polster. It does not count when it is applicable to him. Herbers has started all 10 MLS games for the Fire. He's played 885 minutes, and he's contributed two goals and two assists. And he also plays in a wide midfield position. So potentially a bit of an issue there with Herbers and Gutierrez being their two wide players and having combined for, you know, five goals and three assists between the two of them. You know, they look to be their two best players, their two danger men. And of course, we know that Brandon Bye and Duan Jones are still missing for the Revs. So that is, that's a potential area that the Revs will have to be concerned about. The Revs have already played Chicago. They played them at home already this season, and that game ended in a 1-1 draw. So this will actually be the second team, along with Toronto, that the Revs will be completing their home-and-away season series with Chicago, and we are still just into the month of May. So a bit of an odd scheduling quirk there where we won't see Chicago until next year unless we meet them in Leagues Cup or the playoffs, I suppose, is still a possibility for the Revs, and still a possibility for Chicago as well. But otherwise, we won't be seeing Chicago until next year. And look, even though it's a road game for the Revs, They are desperate for points. They need to throw everything they can at a fragile and struggling Chicago team and try and take 3 points from this game. Chicago hasn't scored in three straight, hasn't been strong at home, and sits outside the playoff positions 10 games into their season. It's as good a time as any to play a team on the road. The Revs are running out of time to jumpstart their season and face tougher challenges in the next two games to come after this. So it's pretty much it's all chicken or no dinner for New England on Saturday. They have to go for all 3 points and take something home with them from an away game for the first time in MLS this season. That's what we're hoping for. That's what we'll all be tuning into to see on Saturday night. And again, the game starts at 8:30. Be sure to, talk yourself into watching it. I'm sure there's other games that you could watch on a Saturday night. But again, let's just try and stick behind the team. Despite reasons why it might not seem like such a good idea for at least a couple more weeks, see if they can pull something off here. And I think it was Sean said last week, if you can't get 3 points against a bad Chicago team, it just leaves very little hope that things are going to start to turn around as we get deeper into, the second quarter of the Revs season or financial year or whatever you want to call it. So with that, that is it for me this week. It's, May is here. The weather's looking good. So hopefully the Revs can follow suit, look good themselves this weekend, and come back home with 3 points on the board.
All right, everyone. It's Seth Maycomber from the Blazing Musket. Happy to be joined by another amazing guest. And this one's amazing. The primary transfer window just closed for MLS. So you know we have to get the guy in with the insight, with the information, with the scoops. It's Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogart from The Athletic. Obviously, all over the world, but he's here with us today. Tom, how are you today?
Going on, Seth. I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Yeah, life is good. Life is good. Maybe not so good for the New England Revolution right now. not the best start to the season for them, but hopefully things will start ticking up. We do have some big news coming from your colleague, Paul Tenorio, talking about how David Kamerman is coming in as the head of player recruitment for the New England Revolution, going to be tasked with building out that roster. I'll be honest, I don't really know much about him. I know he's coming from LAFC. I imagine that you have a little bit of insight regarding him. Who is he and what does he mean to the New England Revolution?
Yeah, great scoop by Paulie as always. It's a very interesting move because Kamerman has been around like the entirety of MLS. Like he was, again, all the info is kind of in Paul's story. But off the top of my head, like he was with the Galaxy and DC United in some of their best periods. Like he's had his hands in a lot of trophies and a lot of successful rosters. And he's somebody like super behind the scenes because he hasn't been like a GM or a technical director. So it's not like he's known to the average fan because he never does any media because people in those roles really don't. So it's a super interesting hire. It's one that like didn't really cross my radar until Paul got the scoop. And like I think that's exciting. I'm just kind of parroting a lot of what Paul said, that part of what Kamerman is going to do is help kind of build out and further establish like a scouting network for the Revs. And all this is good. Like, look at what has happened at LAFC. Like, they quickly put up a phenomenal scouting network. Paul said that Kamerman, like internally at LAFC, is kind of the one who gets the most credit for identifying and pushing for them to sign Danny Bwanga. And like, look, I'm sure a lot of people take credit for that too. If I was the janitor at LAFC, I would take credit for that too. I think that's a good one to have. But he's super well respected around the game. And again, just looking at all the success he's had at different stops at different clubs, it's a good move by New England to poach him off at LAFC.
Yeah, it seems like for the Revolution too, it's important to have that scouting network because as long as you're in Gillette Stadium, it maybe not always going to be the most desirable place to play, in Foxborough on the turf. And I think in the past, the Revolution have found success by finding the right pieces, Buksa, Petrovic, some of these people that maybe are going to use the New England Revolution as a stepping stone. I'm curious, like, comment a little bit on that. And also to think about like, where does the Revolution scouting department stand heading into this move? We know we have Kurt Anofo. We know we have Remy Roy and Chris Tierney that are part of that. How does this kind of help without scouting and probably bringing in some of those pieces in your mind?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, first I would say in terms of recruitment, maybe it's not a strong suit, like in like some of the brand new facilities that the training facility is obviously brand new. So that's probably what they'll push on. But places like Cincy, Columbus with like brand new stadiums. But like, I don't think it's as much of like a deterrent to players. Like, again, I don't want to be simplistic, but the more and more you're on the inside of these things and you start asking questions why, a lot of the times it comes down to money. So maybe it takes a few extra bucks to convince somebody to play on turf, but I don't know. Gustavo Bo didn't seem like somebody, like if he didn't mind to play on the turf, if he thought that was going to be okay for his career, I don't think that that's a big issue. In terms of the front office and scouting department, it's a good question. Like, I don't know the exact reaches of their scouting department. This would be more of like teams have a mix of full-time and part-time scouts. So that's something that cameramen would oversee. Like just thinking back to Columbus because of recency bias and them just winning MLS Cup, they have a very extensive scouting network and people who are more or less like on location. Like it was like they flew all of their scouts in for MLS Cup, which is a nice touch, which is very cool. But it was kind of funny that like some of them like laughed about like, yeah, like I spend a significant portion of my time not here in Columbus when I'm trying to find players for Columbus. So it was cool for them to all be at MLS Cup and all of them to be together rather than dispersed all around the world. So yeah, it'll be more of that than like talking about Anolfo or Tierney or Remy Roy.
Yeah, so in this past transfer window, the Revolution did make some moves, bringing in a goalkeeper as well as a center back. There was also talk from you that they might be moving on from some players. And in your video on YouTube, and if you don't subscribe to Tom Bogart, there's always a little bit of nuggets that are in there. You mentioned that the Revolution were on the phone quite a bit. And you also mentioned that Dave Romney was a name that was thrown out there being shopped around a little bit, or maybe a piece that could be moved on from. What can you tell us about conversations that were had, and were the Revs close anywhere with Dave Romney moving on?
There are some conversations for Romney. And look, again, I know that Caleb Border took exception to, I guess, my framing, and that's fair. Like, honestly, I want people to say what they feel, right? Like, our entire jobs are to disperse information and have analysis and takes, right? Like, I feel bad for some of the people that we talk about who can't always say things like honestly or whatever. So like, I want to point out that like, I saw that and like, I was like, good for you. Like that's obviously I stand by all of my reporting, but like I'm glad that he was able to say his side of it. Right. Like if he didn't totally agree enough, what I would say is I singled out Dave Romney just because I heard his name from, yeah, I don't know. Like it was, you talk to a GM or a technical director of another team. They're all telling me about Romney. Right. Like, and like, I know for a fact that Romney was very, very available. But what I would say is, and probably what I didn't give enough context to is, this wasn't like just a Dave Romney thing, right? Like the Revs are bottom of the East. A lot of players are available. They would consider a lot, like how many players do you think are untouchable when the team's in last place, right? Like, so I probably didn't give enough context to that side of like, yeah, like while he's just a name that I've heard the most, it doesn't mean it's like, oh, if we get rid of Dave Romney, it's all fixed. Like, we're all going to be good, right? Like, that was like, they were the most active team that I heard across the league when asking around to everybody about who's doing what, who are you guys hearing about it? It's like New England, or like, it would always kind of come back to them. Like, I heard of a player that wasn't moved and there wasn't really serious talks. And it was like, yeah, New England have called about him. Because it's just like, all right, like, they're looking on the market. And at that time of the year, it's easiest to get players from within MLS than it is to convince players to come from teams abroad to let go of players because they can't replace them until the offseason. So it was just kind of that kind of stage where they were looking into everything because, okay, we're not happy. We're not accepting where we are right now. What can we do to change it? And do we need to do it right now or can we wait till the summer? And last point, because I definitely know I'm rambling, but with the League's Cup and the calendar of the schedule, best case scenario for summer signings is like 10 games. I don't know the specific number for the Revs because I haven't looked at their schedule, but give or take 9 to 12 games, if that player is signed, registered, visa is all done, he's training day one of the summer transfer window. So, like, there's more urgency at the end of April. Like, oh, crap, like, what if we dig ourselves too big of a hole? That even if we make new signings, and even if they debut the first day they can, and even if they hit the ground running, still will it be enough?
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you have any idea what the New England Revolution were looking for in terms of Dave Romney or any other pieces? I know a lot of those pieces have high contract, and that's kind of part of it is that, you know, in order to bring in pieces, you have to move. And Caleb Porter mentioned that they were basically up against the cap, that they, yes, by selling off some of these items, whether it is international slots or whatever earlier this year, that's how they're able to make some move. I know Tom Quinlan of WPERO mentioned the idea that they were, you know, looking for just like 100K in terms of like GAM or something like that in money, which seems pretty low for someone who played every minute of last year. Yeah. You're shaking your head. It sounds like that was a similar number that you were hearing.
It was framed to me that with more or less specifically that number, or if they're not, they're not holding out for a ton, right? Like, that would the value for New England. And then look, if Caleb doesn't rate him or doesn't currently rate him, then like being able to open up the roster, the cap space from his contract, it was more of that than it was to try to get allocation money back. And like, you kind of see that with other trades. You know, they're like Gregory, for example. I thought that Gregory at Miami, and obviously he's been in Brazil now, I think he's a phenomenal player. Like, if I was a GM and I had an open DP spot, I'd be glad to use it on him, right? Like, perfect world, max TAM, right? But I was like, oh, that guy must have value in the league. And one, GMs knew that Miami were in a hole. So it's not like they were going to be offering a whole lot. It was like, we know you need to get rid of him, so we're going to offer cheap. But like, the other part was teams can't assume the salary into their cap. So they're not also going to throw allocation, a lot of allocation money on top of that, because they need that allocation money to buy down the contract or to make room in the cap. So like, that's something that I have had to keep telling myself that like, yeah, like a lot of this comes down to value and what the contract is. And like, there's some ways where I try to like line up values of trades and allocation money to make sense of it. And you always have to put the contract in, because like Bill Tuiloma to Charlotte, like that was a lot on the face of it. It was like 800,000 or something. And then it was explained to me, it was like, yeah, well, like his contract is really, really good value. It's like 300,000 or something. So it's like, if he was making 600,000, this trade would, like the money traded would have been a lot less, right? Like, so it's always kind of a fluid thing. And in the case of Romney, if he's not playing, they don't have a lot of leverage. And secondly, he has a big contract. And like, I think that good players cost money, so I wouldn't really balk at it, but that's just kind of the way these negotiations go from what I've been told.
Yeah, talking to Caleb Porter when the window closed, he mentioned this idea of trying to bring in 3 to 5 pieces. I want to talk about where on the field at a moment, but I'm curious, based on what you heard in the primary window, because they'd have to move on from someone, right? They'd have to move in because they have to get slots open, whether it's international or just roster slots. Based on what you heard from the primary window, and think looking ahead, who are some pieces that maybe could be moved on from this Revolution side in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, like the Rom is the obvious one. And again, just from what I heard, and then I'll preface this by saying like the rest of the names, like I haven't like heard a lot or haven't, I guess, asked directly about, but it would be the obvious ones. When you think about it, like Veroni, particularly for a DP spot. Sorry, I'm going down the list here. Like Tommy McNamara isn't playing a lot. Like, and he's occupying a senior roster spot. Like, you kind of like just players like that, you can just deduce. And again, like, I want to be careful to again say that, like, I'm not saying that they're shopping him around or whatever. It's just, if they need to create roster spots, the obvious ones are the guys who aren't really playing.
So when you look at this idea of bringing pieces in, where in the field do you think they'll bring pieces in? And have you heard anything in particular about names that could happen during that summer transfer window?
That's a good question. My assumption would be center forward, because like, I love Chonkalai and like the versatility. Like he's not best as a center forward, right? And like, I don't think anybody in New England would say that either. So it would make a lot of sense if they were able to ship Veroni out and bring in another center forward. And then after that, like, maybe the midfield, but like it's still confounding. Like, you look at this roster and like there's a lot to like. Like, there's no outside of center forward, really. There's no like obvious, oh my god, like that spot sucks, right? Like, they have depth at fullback, they have depth now at center back with Arriaga, Romney, Kessler, Farrell, Mensah. Like, again, whether you call them like top of the line or not, like that's a fair discussion, but they've got like they've distributed the players and the investments and everything else. Like, there's a lot to like on this team. So like, I don't know, like when they were in talks to sign Albert Elise, it wasn't like, we need a winger. It was like, this could be a really good deal for a high impact player. Like, so I think it'll be more like that. But again, like with where they are in the standings, like, I think that the MO is just try to get more good players around Carlos Hill, I guess, and more competition and figure it out from there. Because again, I want to obviously keep reiterating, and it's not a huge breaking news, but like they're not happy with where they are, and they're constantly seeking ways to try to rectify that.
Yeah, and it's been interesting, right? I mean, Caleb Porter was brought in a lot of ways to kind of take a roster that was already there and kind of push it over the edge. But I think that there seems to be this belief by Caleb Porter that he wants to play out of the back. And I think when you look at a team like Columbus, they do it so well. And people look at Columbus and you're like, that's really beautiful. But there's obviously pieces that have to go into that. And so I think there's a little bit of a mismatch of whether it's the players or whether it's the coaching or like something kind of has to bend a little bit or understand a little bit. And I think like Arriaga, I was watching back the Miami game, and there are moments where he carries the ball up the field, and that allows for the pressure to be released a little bit. And I know in the last transfer window, they got really close on Baba, and Porter said that the reason why that didn't happen was because of a failed medical. So that center midfield might be something that they look at as well.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when you look at this team and you think about the players there, you think about the new coach there, in your mind, what is going on here? Why are things not working out, and why are they at the bottom of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, man, I wish I had a better answer, but I don't. Like, again, like I think the world of Carlos Hill, and I just the history of MLS, and when you have an elite number 10, even if you have issues across the field, that like the number 10 can elevate and kind of paper over those cracks and still pick up points. He's playing he's playing fine, right? Like, I mean, he's not going supernova, and I don't think that you should expect him to, given everything else around him. So again, the simplistic view for me is both 18s. The Revs have been spoiled for the better part of 3-4 seasons with two of the literal best shot stoppers in MLS history. So they were routinely overperforming expected goals against and giving up less goals than the chances they created because they had two generational shot stoppers, and like that was fine. And like I never like really hit on them like for overperforming, air quote, the expected goals in the defensive side, because like, yeah, special players outperform the average lines, right? Like, so I didn't knock them for that. But right now they've missed now two goalkeepers in a row, and that's quickly coming back against them. And then in the final third, like the difference from Buxa to Vrioni is brutal, straight up, right? Like the fact that like Bobby Wood was starting over him last year, and like they were getting contributions from Thomas Tokalai down the stretch, which helped a lot, because particularly if you're not going to have a center forward that you can rely on straight up to score goals or really just even be decent, that like you need goal scoring wingers, and like that's how they're going to have to cobble it together. Like hopefully Dylan Barrera can get back to form at some point in the near future. Again, it's going to take a little while to get some rust off, but like for me, like the simple view is the defensive 18 and the attacking 18. Not even the final third and defensive third, because I think that they do kind of find there some of their pieces, again, particularly Carlos Hill. But they're not getting the boost of having the savior of a goalkeeper or a center forward like overperforming. In fact, they're underperforming on both sides.
I'm curious, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, and we were talking about Caleb Porter and what he said of being up against the cap. MLS did a great thing for all of us, right? They released the designations, how long the contracts are. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at that comment of bringing in 3 to 5 players and a new coach coming in and having a little bit of control, as well as a new sporting director, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that in terms of what you know. You know, Bruce Arena brought in a lot of pieces that with high contracts and long contracts. How much is that affecting the New England Revolution now as they try to build a little bit more of an identity with a new structure?
Yeah, that's fair, right? Because Bruce was at the heart of everything that they did. And again, it's not like he was negotiating every single deal or identifying every single player, but like, he had the final say on everything, right? So I will give Caleb Porter and Kurt Anolfo, extend them a little bit of grace on that front, because they inherited the roster. Again, I know that Anolfo had been there and been part of it, but from what I heard, he wasn't exactly central, right? As like Bruce was and a couple of the other front office pieces. So I understand that they had to put their own stamp on the roster. They inherited a lot of pieces. But like on the other hand, this team was in second place when Bruce got placed on administrative leave. This team under Bruce and with a lot of the key pieces of Carlos Hill and Matt Polster and Andrew Farrell, Brandon Bide, Juan Jones, like that kind of core, when they're healthy, they've been one of the best 3-4 teams in the East for the last few years. So yeah, they're inheriting a roster. They didn't inherit 2020 FC Cincinnati. So like And I get it. Everybody has their own personal flavor. You want to do things differently, but this was supposed to be, as you said earlier, a ready-made roster, ready to go to compete, and it just hasn't been. And again, I think they'd be the first to tell you how disappointed they are. But again, while I give a little bit of empathy, and then again, like I've said this several times, the CONCACAF Champions Cup hangover stuff is real. But like, look at all the other teams that are in CCC. Like, a lot of other teams have gotten over it. So there are contextual reasons. I wouldn't go as far as to call them excuses. Like, you can make this as part of the answer, but at the end of the day, it's straight up not good enough. It just isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at this upcoming summer transfer window, there's a possibility of getting more resources, right? You guys reporting over The Athletic about the possibility of a second DP buyout, the possibility of more U22s. How much does that help Revs as they potentially try to dig themselves out of this hole this year?
Yeah, in particular for the Revs, like, that opens two U22 initiative slots. And, like, I remember kind of Dylan Barrero pretty quickly. It was like, oh, this dude's good. Like, that was a really good sign. And I remember asking Bruce on a press conference about, like, this was before, like, it was like what they were going to do with the third DP. Like, oh, are you going to sign a young DP? I think it was before, I don't know, I forget what the timeline was. But it was like, oh, are you going to sign a young DP to make sure that you keep the other two U22 slots open? And he was like, more or less, like, no, like, just because it worked for one player doesn't mean that it's going to work for the next two. And I was like, fair enough. And like, he's a coach that wants veteran players, so I get it. But now it's not an either or. Like, there's different machinations, of course, but if they want to have three senior DPs and three U22 initiatives, they can. And I could see them doing that. Like, they've invested a lot more in the Bruce Arena era. And then now that if they want to put up discretionary funds to go sign two U22 initiative players, like Miami has done with Tomas Aviles and Federico Redondo, Diego Gomez, like, this mechanism isn't always a guarantee that you're going to hit on the player and hit on the immediate value and the immediate impact. But when you spend upward more than $5 million on each of these players, like, that risk gets a little bit mitigated as long as you trust the scouting department. It's not foolproof, but the U22 initiative, if you're putting serious money behind it, you have a better hit rate. So that's one way that the Revs could flex discretionary spend if it's in the budget. And I don't know if it is or isn't, because they could be shopping for a new DP very soon if they get rid of Rioni. And those are going to be very expensive too. And if you gave me the option between push all of your chips into a third senior DP or two highly rated U22s, I'd go for the senior DP number nine every day over those. So again, it's easy to spend other people's money. It's easy to say, go spend a $10 million on a center forward and then also $5 million each on two U22 players. It's just not the reality of all situations. So again, I would like to see a senior DP come, but if not, like, you can get better quickly with U22 initiative.
The Revs have some young players, Eshmir Barak-Terevic being one of them, Noel Bach. You've been reporting along the way that there is some interest in Europe. Where do things stay with them? They're not always in the starting lineup under Caleb Porter. Are there still rumblings, any possibility of moving coming up for those two?
Yeah, that has been an issue. The price on Noel Bach has gone down. and again, this isn't, it's not like the Revs turned down big, big offers. And they didn't turn down any offers. No offers came. So it's a false premise to suggest that. But what a deal would have looked like in January is not what the same it would could be this summer. And that's not to say that he's, you know, completely, like, overlooked by teams that are interested, because there's still plenty of teams interested. It's just, it would be difficult for the Revs to hold out for a higher fee. They were looking, from what I understand or what I deduce, and again, these are all fluid prices. The market value is decided by what somebody's willing to pay. But the idea was something in the range of the Tejan Buchanan deal with, you know, 5 to 7 million-ish and a sell-on. I would be very surprised if they got up to seven right now for Noel Bach, just because of the little he's playing. And he hasn't been great when he's been playing, to be fair. But, like, there's still plenty of interest out there. And I'm thinking that we're going to see things move this summer. But again, all depends on if the offers come.
Yeah, how about Eshmir?
I haven't heard anything directly on him. I think that he's in a different spot of his development. I'd be really surprised if he left this summer. But again, maybe he goes to the Olympics and maybe a crazy offer comes in that they can't really refuse.
I'm going to ask you one more here, because you guys have been talking a little bit about Bruce Arena and what's going on with Bruce Arena. He's now eligible to coach in Major League Soccer again. Do you think that he ever finds his way back into Major League Soccer?
It's a great question, man. It mirrors the Bill Belichick stuff, right? Like, again, it was different that Bill Belichick wasn't placed on administrative leave, but, like, there was 8 or 10 NFL head coaching jobs open, and Bill Belichick was very everybody behind the scenes knew he wanted a job and somehow didn't get one. Like, Bruce made it known that he was not retired after New England, and that, like, this winter, like, he had, like, again, I reported, you know, he put his name to Charlotte and DC. So, but again, like Belichick, he didn't get a job either, which is just like weird to think of that. Like, I want to say yes, I'm assuming it, and that's still my answer. I assume that he's going to find his way back at some point. But there was like 8 or 9 openings in MLS, and he didn't really come close on any of them. You know, like, as far as I know, at least, like, maybe I don't know everything, and maybe people aren't talking because he was technically suspended still, so technically not able to talk to anybody. But from what I heard and what I know, I don't think that he was a serious candidate for any team. So at the end of the day, I think he will find his way back, but I would have felt a lot stronger about that 6 months ago.
Tommy, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your scoops. If you don't follow this guy, I have no idea why you're following Major League Soccer. At the very least, I want to say this. Go follow his YouTube channel. There's always little nuggets in there. There's always little kernels to get there. Best guy out there. All the information. Tommy, thank you so much.
Appreciate you, the man.
Thanks again to Tom Bogert of The Athletic for joining us today, and a special thank you to our presenting sponsor, BetOnline. If you listen to Tom Pinzone's preview of this weekend's game, I might be sprinkling a little bit on the under 2.5 goals this weekend, and I'll be doing that at BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be back with an episode following the Chicago match this weekend, but until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.